Then our next item is the work session with Adam Street Reconstruction. And Randy, when you're ready, you up for that, or was...
I can introduce it, yes.
Okay.
Tonight we'll be talking a little bit about the Adam Street Reconstruction. We have invited Christine Stone from Allers & Cooney to make a presentation to you on a special assessment, one of the mechanisms for funding the project. Christine is here.
Okay. Christine, you can come on up and sure. to the podium here. And
we've also have on virtually Terry Lutz with McClure Engineering.
Got that.
And he
okay.
will also provide some information on special assessment from his firm's perspective and their experience. And we have here in person Cody Forge with McClure Engineering, project manager on our Adam Street Reconstruction project.
Okay.
So if you would like to proceed.
She has a stick there, Laura. There's also, if you have like stuff in your book, there's a camera above you and there's probably a dot in the middle. And so you can center whatever, if we need to do something live there overhead, you can set it over the dot.
Okay.
We can get the camera up above too, so whatever works for you. Thanks for coming, Christine. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. So while she's bringing that up, just a little bit of introduction. My name is Christine Stone. I'm a shareholder at the Allers firm in Des Moines. I've been there about 4.5 years. Before that, I was an in-house city attorney and an assistant before that. So I've been practicing in municipal law for 12 plus years now. I'm sort of a generalist. I do special assessment work, public improvement contracting, some litigation, and kind of the purpose of the discussion tonight is just a general overview of the special assessment process. I understand the city has used it before, but it's been quite some time, so just kind of a refresher on what it looks like and things to keep in mind.
And I would note, we used Ms. Stone most recently with the Mid-American Energy Franchise Agreement
yes.
update we did.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Just the initial slides obviously are the sort of disclaimers. Tonight is just a general overview, and every situation is different, and you should always seek specific legal advice if you have specific legal questions. But just kind of starting out, what are special assessments? Special assessments basically are one method of paying for a city project. The special are assessed against the properties that abut your project. And the understanding is sort of that, you know, those who are most benefited by the project should share their proportional cost of that project. The special assessments are paid back once the project is completed. So the city still does have to sort of finance the project on the front end, but then the special assessments are paid at the end of the project and they're payable over time. And they are collected by the county with property taxes. So there's you file your special assessments with the county treasurer, and then they're collected through the normal tax collection process.
Are they apportioned equally, or can you apportion each property a certain percentage?
We'll kind of get into
okay,
the specifics of that, but yes, it varies how you sort of apportion the project. So So we can go to the next slide. So, you know, like I said, the underlying principle is that an assessment should be less than or equal to the special benefits that are conferred upon the property by the nearby improvements that the city has made. So in practice, the application of this principle can be somewhat difficult. So the concept of benefit is somewhat difficult to ascertain. The Iowa courts have said that there's no sort of magic formula that you impose. You really have to consider the specifics of your project and the properties that abut your project in determining what that local benefit is to each individual property. And then you also have to, anytime, obviously, a special assessment is treated similar to a tax, so anytime that you're imposing a tax on anyone, you have to follow due process, and people have to be notified about that. This is some language from the Iowa Supreme Court that just sort of, you know, points out that, you know, very few property owners request to be assessed. Usually it's something that they have not themselves asked for. So there always is, you know, the risk of legal challenges when you impose special assessments. The courts have said, you know, that each assessment against a specific property cannot exceed the special benefits that are conferred on that property. So sort of the preliminary way that you think about a special assessment project is you have to consider the general benefits of the project. So how much of the project is improving and benefiting the community at large, and then what share of the project is really benefiting the folks who are closest to the project. If, you know, for those benefits that directly touch sort of those abutting properties, they can be assessed for that amount. So again, the Iowa Code Chapter 384 allows for special assessments. However, those assessments can't exceed the special benefit, and the code also says that special assessments cannot exceed 25% of the valuation of the property. So at the outset, the council has to make a determination about the lot valuations within the special assessment district, and then you are sort of capped at that 25% amount. Sometimes a special assessment will exceed the 25% cap. And in those situations, you can show that sort of excess amount as what's called a deficiency fund. That gets reported to the county. That sort of sits there unless and until the property is improved. And if the property is improved within the special assessment repayment period, there is the option for the council to try to capture then some of that deficiency. But that sort of falls off once your repayment period is over. So one, you know, very common special assessment project are street paving projects. Usually when you're reconstructing a street, or if you're paving a gravel street for the first time, there's usually both general and specific benefits from the project. The abutting property owners are not required to pay for the general benefits. They really can only be assessed for the special benefits that are conferred on them. So, you know, if they are asked to pay too much, and if they're really supporting the general benefit, they're sort of subsidizing the community at large. So you want to avoid that. The code gives you sort of a laundry list of the types of improvements that you can pay for by special assessment. It includes sewers, drainage conduits, streets, street lighting, pumping stations, and sewage disposal and treatment plants, and many others. In addition to the actual construction costs, you can build in your engineering and legal fees into your special assessment. And you can also include a default fund of up to 10% of the assessable costs. So that's intended to cover, you know, anyone who doesn't pay their assessments. It's kind of like a cushion that you build in, and then the code does allow you to do that, but you have to make that decision at the front end of your project. For private property that abuts your project, if you are going to be doing private utility connections as part of the project, so if you're replacing the sewer or water main and you want to include those connections in your project, you can also include those within the special assessment. And those can be assessed against the adjacent property up to their full amount. So you don't have to follow that 25% cap for those types of improvements, because those clearly are benefiting that property. There are two ways that you can initiate a special assessment. One is through council action, sort of without the property owners being involved. And then the second is a petition and waiver process, which is where the property owners essentially consent to the special assessment. And so the petition waiver process, the code contemplates that the property owners would essentially come to the city and say, hey, we want our street to be improved. We're willing to be assessed for it. You know, we'll sign written agreements that essentially state that, you know, we agree to it. We waive the 25% cap. We waive some of the notice provisions that are required by the code. And we just agree to be assessed so that we can get this project done. So it's, you know, I call it special assessment by consent, or voluntary special assessment is another way to describe it. Sometimes you might get developers who propose this to the city if they're planning on subdividing property and know, you know, that they're going to have to put in a turn lane or something like that. This might be one way of addressing that too, is the voluntary assessment. And then the second way is if the council initiates a special assessment project on its own, and that is without the property owner's consent. Essentially, the council has to arrange for engineering services at the outset. The engineers prepare plats and schedules, which basically shows the project, estimates the cost. There's some preliminary plans and specifications, and then they're engaged to supervise the construction of the project as it moves along. Special assessments are imposed in what I call kind of a two-step process. So you have your process that before you initiate construction, and then you have your council process once the project construction is completed. So at the outset, before you let the project, the council has to adopt a preliminary plat and schedule that, you know, shows the assessment, shows the project subject to assessment, shows the district of the where you plan to make the assessments. And then you also have to adopt what's called a resolution of necessity. And then you let your project, you bid the work, construction commences, and then once the project is completed, you adopt a final plat and schedule, and that's what essentially levies the assessments on the properties. So what types of properties are subject to assessment? It's all property, public and private, which receives a benefit from the project can be assessed, except for highways and streets, so you always carve those out, and any property owned by the federal government. So you cannot assess those properties, but you can assess, you know, sort of your non-taxable properties, so schools, churches, county and state lands can also be subject to assessment. And also railroad property. So the city council is tasked with sort of determining what property to assess and the amount of the assessments. Obviously, your project engineer helps a lot with that. You will instruct the engineer as to the boundary of the district. So there's a process that the Iowa courts have recognized, what's called the FLIP formula. Some engineers will base their assessments on that. It's a mathematical formula that considers sort of the frontage on the project as well as a certain depth back, and then sort of calculates the benefit based on that. But you shouldn't just use a mathematical formula alone. You also need to consider, you know, the specific project that you're working on, the specific properties involved. Sometimes if you have like a corner lot that's got two frontages, you might want to make adjustments for that so that they're not assessed, you know, a greater burden than their neighbor. If it's a large lot, you know, you might want to make some adjustments for that to make sure that they're also not sort of being overly assessed.
Did you say Flint formula?
Yes.
Okay, I thought I heard that right. Okay, thanks.
And then in addition, it's also up to the council to determine, you know, how much of the project costs are going to be assessed on the neighboring properties. Some communities will say, you know, we're only going to assess the paving costs and everything else the city's going to pay for. Some might say it'll be only paving plus storm sewer. Some might assess some portion of the entire project. It's really kind of up to you to make that decision about, you know, what percentage of this project is really benefiting the local folks who are abutting the project versus what percentage of the project is benefiting the entire community. I talked about sort of that 25% cap on special assessments. So at the outset, the city council has to determine what the lot valuations are that are reflected in your special assessment plat and schedule. And the valuation, according to the Iowa code, has to equal the present fair market value of the property with the proposed improvements completed. I would say most communities just use the assessor's valuation. So you go to your, you know, property records with your assessor's office, and that's kind of a neutral third party, you know, who's made that determination. So it takes some of the pressure off the council. Or the code does say that you can appoint a committee of three people who are skilled in the knowledge of real estate to appraise the properties that are within your special assessment district. I've never had anybody, you know, use that process. Like I said, it's usually the assessor's property values that most people use. So the valuation that the city council establishes in the special assessment plat and schedule does not affect somebody's property taxes. It doesn't affect the overall assessment value, except it might affect that 25% cap. All council meetings where special assessments are being considered are open to the public. A public hearing is required to be held before the adoption of the resolution of necessity. There's kind of some goofy notice requirements within the special assessment section of the code. You actually have to publish. To each of the property owners subject to assessment at least 15 days prior to the public hearing date.
That answers all my questions.
And after adoption of the resolution of necessity, the city, like I said, moves forward with bidding the project and awarding a contract. One thing to note is the resolution of necessity does require a 3/4 approval vote, so it's sort of a higher standard of approval when you're voting on that. There is the possibility that a remonstrance can be filed by the neighbors who are subject to assessment, and if you receive one of those, then it's unanimous approval is required. But it's a very high threshold. It has to be 75% of the value of the assessments have to be included within the remonstrance. And then once you approve your resolution of necessity, your preliminary plat schedule is filed with the county, and that essentially puts everyone on notice. So if property changes hands while the project is being constructed, the subsequent owner of that property is still subject to those assessments because you filed your paperwork with the county. So assessments are due and payable only after the project is complete and the council has accepted the project and adopted a final plat and schedule reflecting the actual construction cost of the project. So, you know, your preliminary plat and schedule is prepared by your engineer based on cost estimates and what they think the project is going to cost. But once your project is complete and you have your final construction costs, you know, you sort of refill in the tables based on those numbers, and those are your final assessment figures. Your final assessments cannot exceed the preliminary assessments. So once you notify the property owners of what their preliminary assessment amount is, you know, if your project comes in over budget and for whatever reason, you know, it ends up being higher than what you estimated, those are capped at what the preliminary assessment figures were. Once you've approved your final plat and schedule, you also have to publish and mail notice again. And then the final documents, again, are filed with the county for collection. In your final resolution, which levies the assessments, the council will describe the length of repayment. So you can, for any assessments that are greater than $500, you can say that they're payable over a period of years, not to exceed 15. Some communities use 10, some use 15. That's really up to you. You also can specify the interest rate that's imposed on special assessments. It can't exceed 9% is the current number. That does fluctuate a little bit. Some communities will use like their bonding interest rate. They'll say, well, that's what the city has to pay on the financing, so we're going to pass that on, you know, to the property owners. Some use the full maximum because they want to encourage early payments. So that's really kind of a policy decision by you folks, what sort of interest rate you want to impose.
Do you have cities that don't impose interest rates?
I don't think I have. The code says you have interest must be $1.
Oh,
so
okay.
It can't be less than $1.
There's some specificity.
Yeah, but you have a lot of flexibility, you know, beyond.
So you have a minimum of $1.
Yeah, or up to 9%. I would say most commonly, probably the communities that I work with, it's the bond interest rate is what they'll use. And once you've levied your final assessments, they can be paid within 30 days without interest. Otherwise, after that 30-day period, then interest will start to accrue because they're not, you know, able to pay it until the next one tax bills go out.
So can you offer us
how that would work, because you're, you know, you're levying the assessments with the interest rate imposed, and you have to report to the county after that 30-day period what the amounts are. Yeah, there's not really an option that's built in.
I'm assuming if the cost goes over, yeah. I'm curious, you had mentioned for there's that 25% limit, and then you mentioned the value of the, is it the total value of that property, or is it just total value of that property, or is it just the land on that property less dwellings?
It would be the total valuation that's shown on the assessor's record. So it'd be land plus any improvements on the property.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. If the assessment installments are not paid when they're due, they are subject to collection with penalty, the same as any delinquent property taxes, and they are considered a lien on the property, so they will follow the property if any subsequent transfers occur. There are, from time to time, legal challenges for special assessment projects. What the cases tell us is that the City Council's determination that property will be specially benefited by an improvement is conclusive, and courts have traditionally presumed that the amount of the city's assessment is correct and is somewhat deferential, but in more recent cases that hasn't always been the case. So there was the City of Indianola challenged some assessments. I think that was back in like 2011. Or the property owners in Indianola challenged an assessment that was imposed by the city, and similarly in Urbandale. In both of those cases, the assessments were quite high. And so, you know, I think some of that was just the sticker shock that people had, and so obviously they were motivated to challenge them.
Do those challenges have to be resolved before the project can go on?
So there's an opportunity for them to challenge at the beginning when you're doing your preliminary plat and schedule, and then there's also an opportunity at the end. But if a challenge is filed, it doesn't stop the project. It essentially just asks the court to look at their assessment amount and make a determination of whether it's, you know, correct and reflects the benefits on the property or whether it's excessive.
That's, because the city pays for it up front and collects it at the end anyway. So
right. So okay. It only affects their individual assessment okay. and the dollar amount they would have to pay.
Okay.
Does it take very many people to challenge it or just one?
It can just be one. It can just be one property owner that thinks that they've been assessed too much and they can file a legal challenge. So the burden is on any protesting property owner to show that their assessment is excessive. And so they would have to bring some sort of proof to show, you know, what the actual benefit is to them and why the city's assessment is too high. In the absence of such evidence, the assessment will stand. And if the property owner carries his burden, the remedy is the court would reduce that person's special assessment. So I think that was my sort of legal overview, but I don't know if any of the engineering folks have sort of real life issues to bring up. I'm happy to answer any questions. And I'll stick around. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Christine.
I think Terry Lutz with McClure was going to make a few statements, excuse me, based on his experience, and he's on now.
Yeah, hi. Good evening. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, Terry. You're coming.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah, Mike, I didn't know if you wanted to kick it off or just want me to jump in or.
Yeah, go ahead, Terry.
Okay. I'm having just a little bit of a hard time hearing you, so if everybody could speak up. Yeah, first of all, I wish I was there in person. Cody's there representing our firm, and I wanted to say, first of all, how excited we are to be a part of Carol. And we had a nice ribbon cutting the other day and met several of you. Had a conversation with Mike at our discussion, or at our ribbon cutting, and probably led to me being on the call tonight. But as I understand it, you guys are getting ready to embark on maybe a long-range street improvement program for the city. And throughout a conversation Mike and I were having, and with Randy today even, is, you know, our assessment's something you guys want to tackle. First of all, let me introduce myself. I guess I should have started better. And my name's Terry Lutz. I'm CEO of McClure. I'm a civil engineer. I've been in practice for about 40-some years and have got a lot of experience with different cities of different sizes doing assessments. And they can be very difficult publicly, politically. They're challenging, particularly if you're in a community such as Carroll that have never done it before. By the way, I also served as mayor of Fort Dodge for 4 years from 2006 through 2009. I ran as a one-term mayor and kept my promise after my term. I lived in Fort Dodge for about 30 years, and after that I moved to Des Moines, where I've been for about 11 years and have been running our firm from there. So I'd really like to have a dialogue, if we could, about, you know, assessments. And it kind of starts with, you know, why? Why would you consider doing an assessment? And because politically they can be challenging, but from a financial standpoint, there's a real, maybe a driving reason behind it is really kind of an issue of fairness. When you take on a public improvement project like a city street, oftentimes there are related types of work that get done as part of the project, such as fixing a driveway approach that is privately owned, maybe fixing a water service line from the main to the property line that typically is privately owned, or a sanitary sewer line, or a sidewalk. If you can think of a sidewalk in front of a person's house, if that's in bad shape, and you replace that or a portion of it with public money as part of a street project, is it fair that the public pays for that driveway or sidewalk or that personal private property line with public funds when other properties in the city are not paying or not getting their private issue paid for. So that's kind of the theory behind assessments. It really just, as you looked at this already, it takes the cost of those improvements that are providing specific benefit to a property and assigns those costs to that property. There are a million different ways in which to do that, and essentially the code allows the city council and the city engineer and their attorney to work together to come up with the assessment methodology that can be applied. So it's left up to the discretion of that group, and as long as it's fairly and consistently applied and equitable, the courts have upheld that the assessment methodology is correct. We've done these on street projects. We've done them in county drainage projects. They've stood the test of courts for years, but they are, again, politically difficult oftentimes. Now, in addition to the fairness issue, the other reason that a lot of communities will look at assessments, particularly smaller communities, is because the way you can legally pay for streets is really somewhat constricted for cities. You typically have general obligation bonds that you can issue. Cities are limited to the amount of general obligation debt they can have. And so when you start assessing private property owners for a portion of the project, it allows the city to leverage public dollars with private dollars, and typically then you can do more work publicly and leverage city dollars to do that. So that's the other reason it makes sense. That's the advantage of doing assessments. Again, the biggest disadvantage is the political aspect of getting the public to recognize the fact that there are private property benefits from doing a public improvement. So when I first got in business years ago, we used these quite often. It seemed like it was a much stronger practice in communities to assess the private property owners for public improvements. I've noticed probably the last 20 years it's become more difficult. I don't know if that's because just a general lack of trust of public officials today or why, but they are more difficult. So what we have done as a firm, when cities want to take these on, particularly if they're going to start something new and try to develop new policies, we encourage a pretty robust workshop setting with the public invited, and particularly the people that you may be considering assessing before you actually adopt policies. The code allows the engineer in the city to just kind of figure it out on your own and go through the assessment process, and you can go do it. But in today's world, we would highly recommend some type of a workshop setting where you go through different examples, you get the public involved, and educate them throughout the process. So with that, let me stop for a minute, and I can't see you guys, so I'll just stop and see if there's any questions, and I can give you a few other examples of cities where we actually have done this, and we're about to embark on one now in the city of Adel again, and I can give you some of those examples. But have I said anything to this point that raises a question?
I'm not seeing any at this point. Terry, if you want to keep going, that's fine.
Okay. Okay, let me give you an example. I'll give you two different examples of cities that have done this. One is the city of Adel. They've been a client of ours for ever since I've been in business. The city started out assessing streets in their community, even before we got involved. Adel is currently a town of about 5,000 population, just west of Des Moines. It's growing, and their streets they've been through, I think they have paved almost every street in town. and they have assessed every time they've done it practically. And what they do is they take the full width of the street, and well, they used to take the full width of the street, and I think took a certain percentage of the cost of that street, along with the grading and the engineering costs associated with designing that street, and they assess that to the adjacent property owner, and they go through the process much like the attorney has described. Those assessments probably range on the low end, probably $5,000 or $6,000, and on the high end, probably upwards of $20,000. They have tried in the last several years, they've modified their assessment formula that we have helped them with, and they've tied it to a consumer price index. So the amount that they assess their property owners today is probably less than they did years ago. And when I say less, the dollar amount may be more, but the percentage of the total construction cost is less today than it used to be, trying to recognize the financial burden it could put on some property owners. And while a $10,000 assessment sounds excessive, and you know, $10,000 is a lot of money, when the assessments get paid, as I think the attorney explained, you can spread the payments over a 10 or a 15 year period. If you spread a $10,000 payment over 10 years, that's $1,000 a year. Assessments are paid at the time you pay your property taxes. So you would have a $500 per year, excuse me, per payment of your property taxes added to your property tax bill if you had a $10,000 assessment against your property. Again, they carry interest, there would be interest on that unpaid balance. That would be paid at the time you also pay your principal amount. One advantage of assessments, if you're a private property owner, I'll use this as an example, and let's say you have a driveway approach onto the street that's all busted up, maybe it was poured 30 years ago, it's cracked and it's in bad shape. And if the city comes along and fixes the street, and in that process decides they want to help the property owner by repaving their driveway approach, let's say that's a $5,000 cost, the private property owner can be assessed for that cost, have the city finance that cost up front through the financing of the project. When the assessment is levied, now as a private property owner with that driveway, I can have 10 years to pay off that assessment for my driveway at a very, very low interest rate. So there is some advantage of doing these assessments like this for some of the private sector work that gets done as associated with the street. And Adel has adopted that policy. The city of Carlisle, I know years ago, did that when we paved streets where there were gravel driveway approaches. We gave the property owner the option to have their driveway approach paved in concrete and assessed, or not paved at all. And several of them chose to pave their driveway and have it assessed to their private property assessment. So that's Adel again. They have set the precedent in their community years and years ago. And so for that community to take on another assessment project, while they're not popular, it has been practiced over and over again, and virtually every property in the city has been assessed for a street project at one time or another. We were involved in a pretty controversial project in the city of Johnston, much larger project. This was probably 10 years ago. It was on Merle Hay Road, if any of you are familiar with Merle Hay Road in Johnston. And we developed a completely different assessment methodology where we took the cost of the project and spread it amongst a large subdivision that fed into Merle Hay Road. And it was legal. The assessments ranged as small as $500 a lot, up to I think around $6,000 or $7,000 per lot. It made it all the way through the public hearing And at the very end, the city council opted not to assess. And so we paved the road, the city paid 100% of all the costs, and they did not do the assessments. So there's a myriad of different, there's a million different ways to calculate assessments and so forth. And there are different things that can be included, as I said, not only the public street, but also the private portions of the street. So if you are embarking on this path of doing several projects maybe in the future, when Mike and I were talking at our ribbon cutting, we had just talked about the fact that you are probably, you have a very high likelihood of setting a precedent on this first project that could set the tone for many more projects to come. And whether you do assessments or not, it just seems, if you put a gun to my head and asked for a recommendation from an old, experienced, bald engineer, I would just tell you to maybe pause and take a hard look at the benefits and the concerns with assessments so that you're fully educated and make a good, sound decision as to how you proceed with this first roadway project. And we can help with that if you want. So again, I'll stop there and see if you have any specific questions on maybe how you could move forward.
Terry, I have one, if you can hear me, one of the council members. My name is Jerry. Are you able to hear me?
Just barely. As loud as you can speak to that.
I'll speak up. I'm curious if these assessments are tax deductible to the owner, just like property taxes would be, and also would the interest be deductible from their income?
You know what? I'm not sure. I believe they are not, but I'm not probably qualified to answer that.
Thank you.
Christine, would you have an answer to that one?
I don't. Okay. We've been asked that question before, and we say, you know, they should consult with their own tax advisor about that. Okay. Yeah.
I had the same question, Jerry. Thanks for asking it.
Terry, I got one more. The driveway approach you addressed, what if somebody wants to do their whole driveway? Does the city pay that up front and they pay them back in payments, or is that, could you explain that?
Yeah, you could. There's a petition and waiver process, which the attorney described. You can virtually assess anything that is reasonable, because at the end of the day, the property owner is going to pay that assessment. And so if you started working on, you know, typically the driveway approach is on public property. It's in the property line, from the property line out in the street right away. That's public property, even though it's a private driveway. If you go beyond that private driveway, the private property line, you would probably want to get what's called a temporary easement. We can do a blanket easement. We can make that happen. And you can add that to the assessment roll so the property owner can take advantage of the financing of that driveway. That gets a little sticky. We have done that with sanitary sewer service lines in unsewered communities, where we have extended the sewer line all the way up to within 5 feet of the house and included that in the cost of the assessment. So it's a little tricky, but it can be done.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Terry?
You know, go ahead.
I didn't have any other questions. I'm just sponging in all this information right now.
Yeah. You know, one thing, you know, because we're part of your community and we really want to help you guys, you're about to embark on what I think is a very significant project. As I understand, it's about a $3 million project. I think it's much bigger than that because of the precedent you're faced with. And because this is your first thing, what I would offer up, you know, we want to continue to work with the city in a lot of different ways, but Cody is there in the audience. I would offer a if you're interested, a free workshop where we could put together some examples on the street you're about to undertake and come back to the council and just in a workshop setting kind of show you what some assessment options might be and how that would impact various properties along that road in terms of not only what their assessment would be, but how they could individually pay for that. And with that, without a lot of work, as I understand it, I think you had PFM, if I'm correct, do some financial planning for you with regards to your general obligation debt and taking on these street projects. We could do a little bit of work with them to show how maybe doing some level of assessment may leverage your general obligation debt. And if we spent maybe an hour and a half with you guys in a workshop, I think it would help you get your arms around what all this means a lot better than just kind of talking off the cuff. And we would do that for free. We could do that for you fairly quickly. I will tell you that, as I mentioned to Randy today, and he's aware of this, that if you do get into the trying to establish maybe some new policies on assessments, it will delay your current project. So if timing is critical, then you probably would not be able to get through this process and bid your street project nearly as fast as you would if you did not assess it. But in my opinion, what you're going to do is a pretty significant project and maybe making some long-term policy decisions without fully understanding what your options might be. So I don't know if that's worth anything for you guys, but we'd sure love to do that for you. Simple workshop setting and give you a little bit better idea of what it is we're talking about and how that might impact people.
Probably not a bad idea. I think the more information you get, the better off of a better decision making you'll be able to do, I think. Yeah.
And I would interject here. I mean, and I thank Terry and Christine for coming. You know, I look at it, and I know talking with Randy, this is really one of those things that is a long-term policy. I mean, this is going to be impactful. And, you know, Randy certainly has, we historically and Carol have done a lot of special assessments, but it's been a long time since we've done any magnitude. I mean, you haven't done any, so it's been 14 plus years. And so it is something that, as we look at these, it really, the funding of these street projects will get more and more difficult. And I think we just have to have the discussion. That's why we want to have at least this workshop tonight to plant some seeds. We really weren't looking for huge action tonight. One question I do want to ask both Terry and Christine, out of your clients that do kind of total street reconstruction, you know, what is a ballpark kind of percentage maybe of clients that do special assessments?
It ranges really all over the board. I would just tell you this, if you're going to go through the process, you're going to want to make the assessments large enough so that it leverages your public dollars fairly well. I've seen them range probably on the low end, maybe 10 to 15% of the total project cost, to as high as 50 or 60% of a project cost. I can tell you the city of Ankeny is going through an assessment project. We happen to own some property, and it's a very large piece of property. Our assessment is very large, and I believe in that case, the city is assessing, I believe, about 30 to 40% of the total cost of a new roadway that's going in. So it varies all over the board. And again, we can bring you some examples if you're interested, and it's free, so it wouldn't cost you anything. But we could give you some examples of ranges where it may be 20% of the cost up to 40% of the cost and show how that might work, and also show the impact of some private improvements as part of the assessments.
And I kind of went through my files, you know, in my 4.5 years with the firm, I've worked with 9 different cities on special assessment projects. And then my partner, Maria Brownell, also does special assessments. So I would imagine she's had this a similar number of cities that she's worked with. So it's not uncommon, but as Terry said, a lot of the communities that we work with, you know, they have a long history of assessing for street projects. And so there's sort of a community expectation that that's going to be part of the deal.
Thanks.
And Randy can certainly correct me if I'm wrong, but if I understand too, historically, A, we haven't done a lot of total reconstruction, and historically that first road going in has been either developer-driven or special assessment.
It has, in almost all cases, either developer or the city of Carroll paved their streets back in the 50s and 60s. And almost all of those were special assessments back at that time.
I mean, we have a history. It's just there's been this gap because mm-hmm. we had 50s and 60s streets that now mm-hmm. we're at that point that they're going to have to be replaced.
Just a comment and a question. I really like Terry's analogy about the drains, how the in the county, how you do the drain assessment. And we all know most of us live along Drain 77. We've had these assessments done. We just don't notice them because they're just so incremental because it affects so many different property owners, and we're not talking millions of dollars, but it's not like an all new precedent. You know, it's actually been done before. But the question I would have, I think, was it Christine? I'm sorry. Does the council have liberty to assess only addresses on Adams Street, or would it also include properties that are either adjacent to it or maybe have a, like a corner lot that might have a 13th Street address but butts up to Adams? Am I making that question clear?
The code is flexible, and like Terry said, it comes down to kind of your local practice or your local policy, how you determine how big your district is, who are the benefited properties to a street reconstruction project. There's no magic formula.
Okay. So when we talked earlier, just it could be 60 addresses, but we could also take in corner lots that might have a numbered street address.
Yeah, I'll tell you what Adel and Carlisle both do. If we're paving a corner lot, if we're paving the street on both sides of the corner, rather than that person getting 100% of an assessment, we calculate what that 100% assessment would be, and we reduce it by 30% for no other reason other than to recognize that it's a lot of money to charge a person for two streets to be assessed at the same time. And so there has been some, you know, there's flexibility in how you assign those costs.
I know one community I worked in Minnesota, when they did a special assessment, now this is Minnesota, not Iowa, so it goes out the window probably, but they, by policy, in their assessment policy, said we only charge corner lots 50% of the assessment. In theory, you may get assessed 1 year, and 5 years later get assessed for the other side. So that was how they dealt with it.
Yep. Yep.
Well, I think with 3 big projects that are possible with this next street, well, each one of these over the next course of 10 years, this is a avenue of revenue to help defray some of the cost. And even to the property owner, if they need upgrades to sewer or water systems, definitely gives them a way to pay for this at a over a period of time. So,
Terry, question for you: if we decided yes, we'd like to look at this workshop, what would be a timeline that we could have that? I mean, we actually have an extra week in here. Would it be possible to have a workshop, say, December 13th? Or December 20th?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it wouldn't take us long. These are not going to be like detailed assessments, but we can do enough to give you some examples of what it is we're talking about. give me your dates again, December what, 13th?
13th and 20th. Because of Christmas, we moved our last meeting up a week.
Yeah, and given the timing of what you're trying to do, I think we could be back to your council on the 13th, if you'd want to do it then, with enough to give you some pretty good ideas on whether, you know, how all this impacts everything.
So doing that, is that acceptable to council?
The sooner you get it going, the better, right?
Okay. So we'll take you up on your offer, it sounds like, Terry. And
okay.
Cody's smiling, by the way. I think he's happy about it.
Cody, we got some work to do. Yeah, I think it'd be very helpful for you guys, given what you're about to take on. We'd love to kind of help you kind of wade through it a little bit. Obviously, if you decide after that workshop, if you decide to move forward, we can talk about the level of work that would be required to kind of get you through some policy setting. And again, I would highly recommend a fairly robust public relations workshop, informational public meeting type thing. But we can talk more about that on the 13th.
Thank you, Terry.
Okay, thank you. And again, excited to be a part of Carroll and look forward to working with you guys.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Cody, do you have anything you
Happy want Thanksgiving, to everybody.
I don't think so. Take that in.
So. You pretty much took the thunder out of the sky there for you. Well, I guess you got some stuff to come up with on the 13th.
There we go.
So, all right. Any more questions for anybody?
Well, we have a few more things we'd like to cover on this project tonight. This is only half of the thing tonight.
Sounds good. Keep right on going.
This is just the funding part of it. We have other decisions to make on the project. And tonight, I'll just kind of mention what they may be. as we move forward through the project, we'll continue to probably need work sessions to get decisions on how to proceed. A lot of it, in addition to that funding, is with the design part of the project and how you envision this going. really beginning since it is a full reconstruction project, obviously pavement will be removed. And at that point in time, we would want to take a look at all of the underground utilities. You know, the municipal utilities primarily is what we'd be responsible for. Sanitary sewer being one, that is in the contract, in the engineering agreement, to be televised and analyzed, and a recommendation will come back as to if there should be some replacement included in the project before the paving's done. So that information is yet to come. The same with sanitary sewer service lines. They will also be looked at in the contract and a recommendation made as to whether they should be replaced or not. Now, then the replacement is another decision. In the current city code, the service lines serving property are the property owner's responsibility. So there is a possibility that a sewer may be working, but it may appear that it's beginning to break or collapse. And the decision has to be made whether or not to require the property owner to replace the sewer, even though the sewer is working for him at this time. Tough decisions to make, but we're trying to avoid cutting into this new street as soon as it's done. You know, that happens invariably. There was a question came up, Mike mentioned, about this service line warranty program that was discussed earlier this year. They actually would replace service lines if the property owner is having a problem with them. If they're not, but they just need to be replaced because they appear like they're collapsing or then they would not support it with the warranty. Now, Orangeburg, for sanitary sewer service lines, Orangeburg piping is different. They have told us that they would replace Orangeburg sewer line if it's discovered, you know, in the sewer service, because it doesn't conform to current city requirements. So, you know, it's kind of a two ways. They don't commit on the first, but do if it's Orangeburg. Another item will be storm sewer. Of course, we believe that the storm sewer will be replaced as needed in the event that it's collapsing, or as needed to improve drainage on the street. Another question that had come up related to storm sewer was sump pump discharge. Now, Adams Street doesn't really historically appear to have a problem with sump pump discharge. So it's at this point, it's not included in the project. So it may be a decision later that you'll have to make. Water main will be reviewed for replacement of public mains, but a decision will be made on service lines. Now, the service lines, obviously, if they're not working, a homeowner is going to replace them. But on the other hand, you're facing a lead and copper rule revision at the EPA level. And there are lead lines in this project. So a decision would have to be made if they should be replaced at this point in time. When part of that lead and copper rule revision is currently on hold, it was to take effect, but it has been delayed for a while. Ultimately, if it continues as it was originally approved, the lead lines will have to be replaced in total over a period of years. So something to think about in this project. Copper service lines, you know, certainly there's no requirement now. The lead and copper rule revision, the reason copper is in there is that if the copper lines have lead solder, they are treated the same as a lead line. So there'll have to be a determination if we believe there's lead solder in the underground lines, which there could be. In Carroll, there was a lot of solder done on service lines underground outside buildings in the earlier days. So there could be some lead solder in them.
Well, when we take these out to bid and go to that level, are they bidding, assuming a certain percentage of this type of pipe, or is all of that a change order?
No, we'd have to try to identify as much as possible. In as much as possible, yes.
Okay. Even the service lines into the homes, we would know that ahead of time.
Well, we'd know the best we could. The city has good record, and, you know, probably as good as any record, but they're not 100% complete. And we know at a high level right now that there are about 55 service lines on this project, water service lines, and 24 of them are lead. We know that for sure. So there's quite a few. But on the other hand, you know, on a service line, they can be replaced without tearing up the pavement as long as the main is not under the pavement, concrete. And most of the water main is not under paving. So the customary practice for putting in a service line to the other side of the street is to bore the street. And all of our plumbers in town practice that. So if the decision is made to stay away from lead service lines for this project, we don't believe it'll seriously impact the integrity of the street in the future. So, and then the service line warranty program has has weighed in on that too. They would not replace a water service, a lead water service line, just because it's lead. They would replace it if the property owner was having trouble with it. And we also know that there are some galvanized service lines in this area of town. And that those, in all practicality, they're going to be problems. Galvanized piping has been in the city. It corrodes. And eventually it has to be replaced. But in any case, then there's the public private utilities. Of course, there's not much we can do to require those to be upgraded or repaired or replaced, but we'll certainly make notification to all of the utility companies to consider if they are planning an upgrade, planning a replacement, to do it before the paving is put in place. Then we move on to the street after we get off utilities. There will be information generated on alternatives to the street material, concrete versus asphalt. And we'll have some costs on that for your consideration on selection of the type of replacement material that we proceed with. There's widening to consider. There's a couple of areas.
Can I interject one thing? I think there's also, in addition to like the material question, you know, there's always a cost difference. There's also the mechanics of how do we maintain it? Because we don't have ability to patch asphalt, for example. So Northwest Street, for example, when we had to cut into that asphalt surface, we went back in concrete. Mm-hmm. And so it is one of those things you have to think about is how do we maintain that surface? So you may be able to save a little bit of money, but you end up with different materials, which also create issues long term. So it's more than just a financial consideration, too.
You're probably better off to have a concrete base that you can always asphalt over, though.
That's the history of Carroll. Yeah. Yes, it is. We want to present the information, you know, so that you can see it and make that informed decision. But, you know, certainly you look at the streets in Carroll, the history is concrete, Portland cement concrete. Mm-hmm. We've got some widening areas. You know, there's one right up here from 7th to 8th Street. You know, who do we put a widening back? Who pays for it to be put back? That'll be a decision. Also, there's widening between 10th and 11th, certainly adjacent to the Adams Elementary School. Those are all things to consider on how they get put back and who pays. That goes back to the financing and funding of the project. Driveways, Terry had mentioned those. Sidewalks, another thing. Certainly, we believe the city will probably take care of the pedestrian curb ramps at all the crossings. But there's the opportunity for sidewalk inspection and to put any repair or replacement into the project is an option. We also will be addressing carriage walks, and there are quite a few in this project, and some even have steps in them. So those are things that decisions that really have to be made as to whether they go back in or steps go back in the right of way. And we have carefully tried to avoid steps in the right of way for the past number of years. But there are some locations on this project that have large steps, a lot of steps. So something to consider. And then we have trees. There's trees adjacent to the roadway. You know, some may be in the way for just plain constructability. You know, just too close to the curb to get a paver between the tree and the curb. So they may have to be removed. another safety, a clear zone behind the curb. And then the third would be just ash tree removal. You know, is it time to just remove them because they're ash trees? So that's kind of a 30,000 foot look at some of the decisions you get to make in the next few weeks.
For the trees, that's just in the right-of-way only.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. And there are trees in the right-of-way that are well beyond the interfering with the project. And, you know, those could be left at with no problem, really. So, things to consider as you drive up and down Adams Street. Otherwise, I don't have anything else. We'll get into this deeper.
Otherwise.
Later. Yeah. Anything else? I
think my brain's full. Well, we wanted to present the information so we could at least, like I've been saying, plant the seed. We've talked about this for the last year and a half, that there's going to be a lot of decision points with this project. Those decision points are here. This is kind of what staff's identified that we need to work through and get some guidance. So as we move forward, you know, start thinking about these issues and we'll take that feedback and really get policy from you guys on how we move forward with this project.
Ray, how many of those properties have that orange bird?
That we're trying to determine now. We'll be able to do that in two ways. We are going through our records for one, but then certainly when they televise the main line and look up those services with their video equipment, they may be able to help identify if they are or not.
Okay.
Right.
Randy, will you just confirm from where to where again?
From Highway 30 to 13th Street. Probably not including the intersection of Highway 30, probably including the intersection of 13th Street. Any other questions?
Didn't some of this get done on the streetscape?
The out here on the streetscape in the block from Highway 30 to 7, of course, all the sidewalks done. And all of the curb and parking is done. So basically, it'll just be the center part of that. That'll be retained. Where it's, you know, currently asphalt, broken up asphalt.
How is that everything?
On this topic, you for tonight.
We got to talk about financing sometime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that, you know, we certainly have had the preliminary discussion, but certainly the special assessment will be a big part of that. So there's, you know, we need some guidance on that, and I think we should talk with Suzanne in particular and work with McClure on trying to understand maybe possibility of what those limits are that we could. What we're looking at possibly, because then we can go back to Suzanne and maybe feed that into the models she's done, and that'll give us a better picture of, you know, what is in the property tax impact, because we know this project will have citywide property tax impacts, and with assessment, obviously that will lower the property tax impact citywide. So let's work together on that and
forward. Do you have so we've done special assessment before. Do you have a formula already?
It's been done a lot of different ways, primarily that Flint formula. Oh. That's the one that has really stood the test of the courts and is certainly the method to use in today's assessments. The big decisions in assessment is, as you've been told tonight, is what do you want to assess? You know, 100% of the street, or the center 22 feet of the street, or it, like Terry said, there's a million ways to assess. And those are really the decisions you want to make for your possible precedent setting for future projects.
Okay. Okay. Got a lot more information coming, I guess. So. Thanks, Randy. Thanks, Christine. Appreciate it. Thanks, Cody. With that, we'll conclude the work session, and then we will move to a closed session for Iowa Code 21.5(1C).
Mr. Bruner, are we legal to go into closed session?
Thank you. Yes, council is so authorized.
Okay. If you guys want to stay, that's fine. Just know that whatever you hear in this can't be discussed. I know you probably get that. Yeah.
As long as legal counsel said we can.
Yeah, we've been discussing that, and if you guys want to stay, because this may affect something down the road with what you guys have.
I'll stick.
So, yeah, that's fine.
If that's all right.
Yeah, I don't mind. I think just from that purpose, did you understand that whatever you hear in this portion of the meeting, you can't talk about?
Does it go on Facebook?
Correct. Can't talk about it with anybody. Thanks, Doug.
And just for the record, before I shut down the YouTube, there's no intention to take any actions after the council meeting. They'll simply adjourn the meeting, so there'll be no actions taken.
Taken.
So, Chantel, you can log off if you want.
Okay.
We have a closed session.
Yeah.
So move to go to closed session.
There's a motion to go to move session. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion and a second. There's no other discussion. We'll go ahead and vote, please.
Fleshner?
Yes.
Steven?
Yes.
Dirks?
Yes.
Haley?
Yes.
Bates?
Yes.
We're going to closed session. Thank you.